This episode of China Money Podcast is sponsored by Lehman Brown, a China accounting, audit, and advisory firm. Golden Gate, a law firm providing a full range of legal services in China. Covert Limited, a leading internet privacy tool. And 51mice.com, a comprehensive online platform for meetings, incentives, conferences, and exhibitions in China. Please go to our website, chinamoneynetwork.com, and click on our sponsors links. Thank you so much, everyone, for your support. Hello, everyone. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Tommy Ip, founder and managing partner at 210 Million Under Management Unicorn Capital Partners, a Hong Kong-based fund of funds manager with a focus on Chinese venture capital vehicles. Before founding Unicorn in 2015, he was a partner and head of North Asia at Emerald Hill Capital Partners for over 9 years. He talked with me on the sidelines of the HKVCA Asia Private Equity Forum 2017 in Hong Kong last week. Here is our conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, Tommy. Welcome to China Money Podcast.
Thank you.
So, congratulations on raising your new fund. But firstly, why did you leave your previous company, Emerald Hill Capital Partners, last year to start Unicorn Capital?
Right. I think one of the reasons was that we believe that that was a very good timing. So, I left Emerald Hill back in the end of 2014 and founded Unicorn Capital Partners together with my partners in the beginning of 2015. Okay, so that was
the height of the venture.
Exactly, you can say it was the height of the venture capital industry in China as well as globally, but particularly China. I think in the past 3 to 4 years, we actually went through a very interesting period where we call the VC 3.0 period. So the VC 1.0 was back in about 15 to 17 years ago, right? Around 1999, year 2000, when we first started to see venture capital managers, mostly managers with U.S. Roots coming out here to Asia and started to invest in the technologies.
That's when Sequoia was founded.
That was even before Sequoia.
Before. Okay, Sequoia was founded in the
when the times when IDG was founded.
Oh, I see.
Legend Capital, Warden International, HNQ Asia Pacific. Some of these guys are no longer around, okay, but they were the first generation, the grandfather or the pioneers of the Asian or China venture capital, investors. China, I think at that time, there were probably only a handful of, investors. One of the most active ones was IDG, who has been around for more than 20 years now. Okay, but most of the other, first generation VCs were more focused on, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Singapore, right? The more mature, economies at that time. Okay, and then it came the, VC 2.0, right? That was, when Sequoia China, Matrix China, Qiming, Northern Light, DT Capital,
GSR, after the dot-com bubble,
were founded. And that was around, 05, to 07, right? When many of the Silicon Valley VC firms started to look at China and through different arrangements, set up their China funds or China teams, okay? So that was the, VC 2.0 period. And about 3 years ago, we started to see a wave of, a younger venture capital professionals coming out of the big platforms or the top tier managers to, you know, start their own venture funds. Okay, these guys are usually, you know, younger professionals, but in the meantime, you know, very experienced. Many of them have been working in their prior firms, you know, more than 5 to 6 years.
So definitely, I can think of Banyan Capital. CES.
So Banyan, right? Banyan was, you know, I think the first group, right, who basically started that, you know, wave. Then you have, you know, Source Code, you know, FreeS, right? Just to name a few. Okay, so you know, so when I was with Emerald Hill, we actually backed a few, you know, VC 3.0 groups, including Banyan, including, you know, K2, right, and a few others. And at that time, I believe that, first of all, you know, the timing was perfect. You know, China is going through an inflection point in its TMT sector, when the economy started to shift from the old economy to a new economy, you know, changing from a, you know, export, you know, oriented economy to more of a, you know, domestic consumption driven economy. And I think in that shift, you know, the internet mobile driven opportunities will be driving, you know, the growth for this, you know, shift in the, you know, economy. Okay, so I think in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years, you know, the new economy, mainly, you know, TMT and healthcare, will be driving a lot of the growth, and we believe, you know, this is the perfect time for us to form a more focused and specialized a product that is target for that specific sub-asset class in the private equity industry in Asia.
Right.
So what we do today is mainly focused on the new economy. Like I said, again, mainly TMT and healthcare in China.
So you yourself is actually part of the VC 3.0. Part of the wave of younger managers leaving the bigger established Western firm and starting up their own.
Exactly. Okay. And that's why, you know, what we do, you know, very much, you know, resonate well with, you know, many of the managers or the 3.0 managers that we back, because ourselves are, you know, entrepreneurs just like them.
Well, we have to point out that this is actually part of a wider trend, which is in China, under the government's encouragement of entrepreneurship and innovation, everybody's rushing into the venture capital industry, not only people who have worked in the industry for a long time, public companies, private companies, insurance companies, wealthy individuals, everybody. So do you feel like, you know, before 2008, I was working in New York, and then... this guy who writes a newsletter started a hedge fund. Okay. Another hedge fund guy said, this is probably a sign that I should exit the business because, you know, someone with probably not enough experience qualified to do this business are entering the business. Do you see sort of something similar in China's VC world?
Yeah, I think this is a bit different from, you know, hedge funds, right? Hedge funds, you know, come and go. Okay, but I think what we are seeing today is a you know, relatively young economy that is leapfrogging, you know, many of the you know, developed, you know, economies in the West. Okay, so there are a lot of opportunities for this, you know, new market, right? Like I said before, you know, when, you know, China is shifting from an old economy to a new economy, and you know, mobile internet, you know, internet-driven opportunities, I think at least in the next 5 to 10 years will be big. Okay, and we are seeing a lot of entrepreneurs, not just, I think, raw talents coming out of Beida or Tsinghua, right, like 10 years ago. I think in the past, I think, you know, 5 to 6 years, the BATs have train a big group of experienced, you know, product managers, you know, engineers that are ready to come out and set up their own, you know, startups firms. So in terms of, you know, talent pool, right, in terms of opportunities, I think this is unprecedented. I think, you know, we are seeing an inflection point for this, you know, industry, which we believe will be sustainable.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll get into those specific industries later on.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to your fund. You started fundraising last summer.
Yeah. No, we. We are currently managing two funds at this moment. So we started our fundraising right after we founded the company back in January 2015.
Right.
Yeah, so it's, so 2 days ago, it was our second year anniversary.
Yeah. So you managed two funds, both US dollar funds?
So both are US dollar funds, yeah.
So you have fund one and fund two, and total is about 210 million.
So our first fund, I know this is a bit confusing, but our first fund is called Fund Zero. Our second fund is called Fund One.
Interesting.
So together we are managing approximately 210 million. And we just kickstarted.
Why starting from Fund Zero? Technology or reference to zero and one?
No, I think, you know, again, you know, timing was critical at that time. We had some existing relationships before we founded the company in 2015. So we wanted to quickly, raise some capital so that we can lock up a few key relationships for us. So Fund Zero was more like a warehousing facility in which we raise a small amount of capital from a few, LPs.
So how was the fundraising process? It's maybe ongoing for 2 years. What's the most difficult part in that?
I think, the fundraising for our first two funds, it was quite smooth. So we quickly closed our first two funds, in the first 9 months, after the launch of the company.
So the Fund Zero and Fund One, what's the target fundraising total, like the final size, what you expected?
Yeah, so it was a little bit, more than our target. So our target was 200 million between the two funds. So you can look at Fund Zero and Fund One as one fund. So that is our first fund. Our target was 200 million, and we ended up a little bit, above our target.
So you have this pool of money, you want to back emerging venture capital funds in China and Asia. Tell us a little bit about your screening process and what type of funds you prefer.
Yeah, so we look at four different types of managers in Asia, in particular China. Okay, so the first type of managers, what we call the top tier managers. I mean, there are not that many top tier managers in China yet.
If
although,
you can put a number on it, dozens?
Probably, less than 10. And our definition for top tier is based on the fact that they have been able to consistently generate outperformance versus the rest of the market.
So okay. That would be Sequoia, IDG,
I think these are definitely some of the top tier brand names out there. I think these groups in average are managing 3 to 4 funds, and they have been able to demonstrate a very consistent outperformance. Okay, so that is a type of manager that we back. The second type of manager that we back, which also accounts for a large part of our portfolio, is exactly what you alluded to earlier, is what we call the VC 3.0 or emerging managers, right? So, I think we name a few, like, Bang Yang, Sosco, Free Ads, younger guys, very aggressive, very hungry, who are also, quite experienced, with teams that have been, you know, working together for quite some time. Although first time manager, but not first time team. Okay, so we like, you know, these guys, and we want to back these guys, you know, in their early days and grow with them. And we believe that, you know, like I said, the Venture 3.0 phenomenon that is going on right now is very similar to the U.S. about 5 to 6 years ago, when the Andreessen Horowitz, you know, a founders fund, YC 500 startups came out, right? So, you know, we are also seeing this happening in China with, you know, new talents coming in who are trying to disrupt, you know, the market, right, with, you know, very interesting business models to disrupt the old school venture, you know, managers. Yeah.
So since you just mentioned this VCs 3.0, they're new managers but not new teams, but do you think they will be able to sustain their performance and prove their abilities to perform?
Yeah, I think it's a bit too early to tell. If you look at these VC 3.0 managers, I mean, even for some of the names that came out maybe 3 years ago, you know, they are still, you know, going through their fund two right now. So it's a bit too early to judge where, you know, their return will be sustainable, whether they'll be able to graduate into the first tier, you know, manager category.
You should have a better idea, right?
Yeah, but we are getting, I think, you know, it's getting more visible and visible now, but it's still going to take a few more years. Some of them have very strong performance on paper. Okay, but we haven't really seen, you know, money coming back yet. I think, you know, for a venture fund LP, you know, we do have to understand that, you know, venture is a very long asset class. Okay, so the holding period is very long comparing to private equity or growth capital. So right now it's a bit too early to judge whether they will. Become, you know, they will be, you know, sustainable or not. But so far, I think the managers that we have backed in that particular category have been, you know, doing quite well.
I mean, that's a key question. A lot of these funds have great, you know, numbers to look at on paper.
Yeah.
But the key is, can you realize those returns actually in reality?
Exactly.
What's your assessment?
I think that is a very important question. So that's why when we are evaluating managers, I think we give a lot of you know, credit or weight to, you know, professionals that have been through the cycle, and we actually like you know, managers that have lost money before, okay? So they remember that it really hurt, okay? We encourage managers to take money off the table when they are given a chance, and not to be too greedy. So people who have been through the cycle with, you know, experience to, you know, in taking money off the table, I think is one thing that we look at when we are, you know, looking at, you know, managers. So that is definitely you know, something that we look at.
Well, let's be a little bit more specific. There are a lot of highly valued technology companies in China right now, lots of unicorns. Do you feel like the valuations will be written down, a portion of them will be written down in the future?
Definitely. You know, I think one thing that is very specific to venture LPs is that, you know, just because, you know, your NAV is marked up, you know, based on a few upfront financing, doesn't mean that, you know, it is, you know, sustainable. Okay, especially in the early days of a fund's investment period. Okay, so especially given a high valuation environment, a very, you know, hot market, many managers are able to record, you know, upfront valuation, you know, upticks based on these, you know, upfront financings, okay? But whether, you know, all of these companies will be able to sustain that, you know, high valuation, we just don't know. Especially for, I mean, I think the earlier you go, right, for example, Seed and Series A, I think the more volatile their value, your valuation will be, especially in the first, you know, 3 to 4 years during the investment period. I think after the investment period, I think the valuation in your portfolio will stabilize a bit. But, you know, within that first, you know, 1 to 4 years, I think there is a lot of, you know, volatility. You gotta, you know, be ready or be prepared for that type of, you know, volatility, right? So a lot of companies nowadays are marked at an extremely high valuation, and you know, we, you know, internally, you know, we are actually quite conservative, and we, when we are assessing our own underlying portfolios, we actually apply, you know, certain, you know, discount, you know, to what has been provided from our managers. Okay, so we are prepared that, you know, some of the companies will be, you know, written down, and in some cases, I think, you know, we will see, you know, some, you know, write-offs as well. So we're prepared to go through that, you know, valuation volatility, especially in the first, you know, 1 to 4 years of a fund's life cycle.
Well, some of the companies I can think of whose value will probably be discounted in the market include 58.com, Dianping, of those, do you have some other names?
No, I think, you know, I mean, the companies that, you know, you talk about, I think fundamentally they're all, you know, great companies. You know, there are many unicorns or, you know, billion-dollar, you know, venture-backed companies out there. Many of them, I think, comparing to, you know, like 15 years ago, the dot-com bubble, I think the difference is that I think most of the companies that we see today, you know, who are able to, you know, raise big round of financings and command that, you know, high level of, you know, valuation, you know, they are all, you know, fundamentally sound. Okay, I think, but the only problem I think with some of them is whether, you know, the valuation is justified, right? So I think, you know, some of the companies will be struggling to justify, you know, that valuation, you know, that, I mean, that they, you know, the valuation that they, that they raised their capital in their prior round. So it's giving management a lot of pressure, yeah, to justify that
yeah,
valuation.
I mean, even DD is facing a lot of pressure, reportedly. So what do you think is going to happen to them? They will be able, you know, a lot of them are still capital intensive business. They need,
yeah,
to burn a lot of cash. They need to continuously raise capital.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like there will be down rounds? They're going to raise funding at a lower valuation, which really hasn't happened in China? Or do you feel like some of them might be bought by other company, like basically more merger,
yeah,
and acquisitions?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I think in the past 12 months or so, you know, we started to see some, you know, down rounds, or what they call, you know, valuation reset, okay? But I think, you know, these companies, you know, are not really, you know, the DD of the world, right? I think DD is beyond that, right? And they are very well funded, okay? But, you know, companies, you know, who, you know, raise, you know, a big, you know, Series B and Series B round, Series B and Series C round in the past, you know, 24 months, right, at extremely high valuation, now they may have to, you know, raise a down round, especially with business models that require to burn a lot of cash, right? But again, we're not really talking about companies with DD's scale. Okay, I think for companies like DD, okay, I think they are definitely getting pressure from existing investors, to go public sooner. But I think right now, if you look at the capital market, it's still not a great time for companies like DD to go out, because an IPO today means a down round, okay, from a valuation standpoint. Uh-huh. And with that much capital that continue to come into the market and focus on late stage, they have a lot of demand from these late stage investors for them to stay a private longer, right, than 5 years ago. Okay, so that is one new phenomenon that we didn't see about 4 to 5 years ago. So I think many of these larger companies, although they are facing pressure from their existing investor base to go to liquidity sooner, they still, I think, have investors coming in to buy them more time until they go, public. Yeah.
Could you enlighten our audience, like, what are some of the companies that might, that's really facing pressure for down rounds or?
I think companies.
You just said like raising like Series B or Series C.
Yeah. I think I think business models that require
O2O plays.
Yeah, I think O2O had a really bad year.
Yeah.
Last year, right? And I think a lot of companies actually disappeared. I think some of the P2P finance companies are also facing challenges, okay. I think we also, you can also look at, what some of, the overall investment pace for Chinese venture funds in the past 12 months, it has really slowed down because everybody, has been trying to look for a new direction, and I think many of them were a bit lost. Right, because they, some of them, invest heavily in a fintech or P2P and O2O, and they don't want to touch that space at least for another 12 months or so, and there are less platform opportunities coming out of e-commerce, right? So. Many of them, are still looking for the next big thing.
What is the next big thing in your view?
I think many investors are looking at AI,
yes,
right?
That's
okay.
A keyword.
So that is definitely a buzzword in the market right now. If you look at, AI or artificial intelligence, I mean, it's not really a sector. But rather a enabling technology that is going to impact, what we do, okay, going in the future, okay, and that is actually I think one of the biggest technology that we have ever seen in many years. Okay, so it's definitely going to be a big opportunities. When we talk about AI, what is driving AI is really data. So I think data driven opportunities will be very interesting going forward. Yeah.
Well, Tommy, We'll run you out of time, but I just have a few very simple questions, quick answers if we could. So you're a fund manager. So how many funds do you back in total currently?
We have about 20 funds right now with more than a dozen relationships with managers.
And they're all like China or Asia focused?
Yeah, right now, mainly China, but our mandate is Asia, so we also look at, you know, Southeast Asia, India, Japan, and Korea. But our bar is pretty high.
Okay. Yeah. So when you say pretty high, like 80% of the assets are in China focused?
So far, I think we have more than 80% of our capital deployment in China.
In China focused.
We also have, you know, some, you know, cross-border China-U.S. exposures as well.
So since your funds are in U.S. dollars, so you can only invest in U.S. dollar venture funds, right? Mm. So that means you can't invest in RMB funds?
Not at this moment, yeah. But we do have plan to, launch a RMB denominated vehicle.
What's the timeline of that?
It will be in the next 12 months or so.
Because you don't want to miss the RMB funds opportunity, right? Because a lot of smart investors in RMB space are emerging as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, to start with, you know, we will invest, our RMB into the RMB vehicles managed by our existing dollar investors.
Last question. After a decade investing in PE and venture funds in China, how would you say are the performance for this asset class?
I think definitely, venture has been outperforming in the past, 10 years or so. But I think the challenge for a venture is that the holding period is relatively longer. So you do have to be a patient LP in this particular asset class. So you cannot be going in and out in this, asset class. So you have to stick with it for at least, 10 to 15 years. So the challenge is, I think, DPI. It hasn't been, a lot of, capital coming back globally in venture asset class in the past 3 to 4 years. So all the LPs are actually waiting for the IPO market to improve so that some of their big unicorns, such as Uber, Airbnb, Didi, Dianping, Meituan, will be able to go public and generate, distributions back to LPs.
What's the average 10-year return for China venture funds?
For you to invest in venture asset class and take, high risk, and I think the return has to be justified. So it has to be better than a private equity, which is a lower risk, a lower return, asset class. So I think, for LPs, I think at the fund level, we do expect at least, 3x, 3 to 5x, that type of, return, over, I think, 5, 5 to 10 years.
Well, thank you so much, Tommy, for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you.